Anyway, this is all, in a way, quite preliminary. I hope I'm not taking up too much time. But it's probably time I gave you, though actually we're about halfway through, don't worry. We're not going to be here all night. So it's time I gave you a sort of sketch of my itinerary. I've mentioned various places, but you may not have a very clear idea of, you know, exactly where I did go. So perhaps I'd better say without more ado that I actually visited three states. India comprises about a dozen major states, plus various other territories. I think all these states are probably bigger than the United Kingdom. Some are as big as Spain, as big as Germany. I visited Maharashtra, which is certainly greater in extent than the United Kingdom. Gujarat, which is probably a little bit bigger, and Rajasthan, which is very much bigger. I visited these three states and gave lectures in all of them. And I also visited the Union Territory of Delhi, you know, where the capital, of course, is. But I spent most of my time and did most of my work in Maharashtra, among the ex-untouchable Buddhists, among the Mahar Buddhists, and that being, you know, the center of the Buddhist movement in India, and where we have most of our own activities. I started off by giving some lectures in Pune. Then I went up into the hills, into the Western Ghats, and I gave a lecture at Panchgani, and then another one at Mahad. Mahad is associated with the life of Dr. Ambedkar because it's there that he did something which really upset the Hindus. He burned the Manusmriti. The Manusmriti is one of the orthodox Hindu law books, which says that even Shudras, and Shudras of course a bit higher than the untouchable, but even Shudras, if they happen to hear the words of the Veda, the sacred words which only caste Hindus can hear, then molten metal should be poured into their ears, and it says things like that. So Dr. Ambedkar, as a gesture, he burned the Manusmriti on a very famous occasion. So I was there celebrating with other Buddhists the anniversary of that great occasion. And there was a sort of cenotaph, a sort of column that they directed, and I was shown this. They were very sort of proud of this. And I already took photographs, and I gave a lecture, and so on. Then, of course, there were lectures in Bombay after that. And here, I must give you a bit of a picture of these lectures, some of these lectures anyway. In Bombay, I gave quite a number of lectures in the course of a few days. But anyway, the most spectacular was one at a place called Worli. Worli is a sort of working class area in Bombay. It's quite extensive. And there are lots of ex-untouchable Buddhists living there. They mostly live in great slum blocks. There's row upon row of these slum blocks. There are tens of thousands of these people, perhaps 100,000 or more, living all in the same area. It's very slum-like. Travelling wasn't easy. Sometimes transport broke down. Sometimes cars, you know, didn't turn up. Trains were late, etc., etc. But anyway, there was a party of 10 or 12 of us travelling around there. I had with me, just for those 3 weeks, Nagabodhi, Lokamitra, Punya, I think, part of the time, Jyotipala part of the time, Kevala part of the time, Vimalakirti all the time, Dharmarakshita all the time, and a number of other order members and mitras. So we needed three cars to transport ourselves. Sometimes we had to go by train, or partly by train, partly by car. Some of us taking the bus sometimes, some of us going by car, some of us by train. The logistics of it was sometimes extraordinarily complicated. Anyway, Lokamitra managed it all somehow. We took with us all our tape recording equipment, all of which had to be set up under very difficult conditions everywhere we arrived. As soon as we arrived, Purna and one or two of our young friends had to go straight along to the place where the meeting was going to be held without even a cup of tea after a long journey, and set up everything at once and test it and check it. And there were all sorts of complications and difficulties and things going wrong, you can imagine, because they wanted to take everything that I said, every lecture that I gave. We also carried around an enormous quantity of literature for sale. This is perhaps something I should mention. We've got an enormous amount of literature now available in Marathi. Much of it translated from lectures which I have given, or things I've written. And We had an enormous sale of books, or well, booklets and magazines and so on. FWBO or Traloki Bodhasanga Sahakana publications at every one of our meetings. Sometimes, at some meetings, when they were very big, we had four bookstores, one at each corner of the meeting, and all selling publications like hotcakes. And so we had to carry this enormous stack of material around with us. Plus, of course, you know, bedding, blankets, sheets, and all the rest of it, because sometimes we just didn't get those where we stayed at night. We stayed the night in all sorts of places, doss houses, as I call them. And there were one or two that could be, you know, classed as hotels, some of the private houses, but very, very poor people's houses, one must remember that, with no privacy virtually, not quiet, and very inadequate sanitations and so on. Sometimes we stayed in quite palatial rest houses, which are usually made available only to high-ranking government servants and ministers in the government. Sometimes we were able to make use of these, and then we really revelled in luxury for a few hours. Despite the difficulties, that then the programmes as a whole were very, very successful. I myself, you know, during that tour period, I had to follow a very strict programme. Every minute almost was regulated, because I had to prepare a talk, come what may. I mean, despite the conditions, I had to prepare a talk. It had to be a good talk, because people were coming in their thousands to hear. It was going to be tape recorded, it was going to be translated and published in the magazine and with the booklet. So I had to turn out something of some value. So I used to have to rigidly seclude myself for up to 3 hours every day, regardless wherever I was, and prepare my talk, which I usually prepared quite carefully. And I must say, I did quite enjoy preparing. So, as I've said, these 3 weeks in Marathwada, in the Marathwada area, central Maharashtra, these were the most strenuous and demanding weeks of the whole tour. And I must admit that once or twice my physique didn't quite stand up to it, but nonetheless, I was able to carry on. Then, after that tour, after a few days in Pune and less than a day, perhaps in Bombay, we all went up, or many of us went up to Ahmedabad, which is the capital, because Gandhinagar is now the capital, but the biggest city, population 2 million, in the state of Gujarat. And we had a week there, during which I gave a number of lectures, also felt a bit elegant. Then we went up into Rajasthan, the state of Rajasthan, still going north, and spent a couple of days in Ajmer, where I had lots of connections, as in fact I had in Ahmedabad, and then on to Delhi. So in all these places I gave talks. Then we came back to Pune, back to Bombay. Then of course I came back to England. So as you can gather, I was mainly concerned during these 3 months giving public lectures, you know, having a sort of maximum exposure, maximum contact with people, putting words of Dharma as much as I possibly could. I found the experience of giving all these lectures very, very useful and very, very satisfying, because everywhere I went I felt people really did want to hear the Dharma. Don't forget, until recently they haven't had much in the way of literature to read in their own language. A lot of these people also are still illiterate, especially the women. So it's only through the spoken word that many often have an opportunity of learning about the Dharma. And it's really quite an experience to have thousands of people sitting in front of you really wanting to hear the Dharma, really wanting to hear what you have to say. It means a lot to them. It's a sort of almost vital need. It's not out of dilettante interest. Well, after all, these people, I'm talking now, of course, mainly about the ex-untouchables, the Mahats, they've left Hinduism for the sake of a better life in every respect, not just spiritually, but socially, politically, economically, and so on. And they feel that they can get that through Buddhism. They feel that through Buddhism they can create a new society as well as improve themselves. So Buddhism means a very, very great deal to them. A lecture on Buddhism means a very, very great deal to them. And I think I can say that a lecture from me meant a very great deal to them, because most of them had had contact with me before, and most of them had heard about me before, and they really did want to hear what I had to say. So there were the lectures, taking up so much of my time, not only giving them but also preparing them. I also, of course, inevitably met people individually, privately,
had interviews, so to speak, also just met old friends in a more social sort of way. I also attended a couple of retreats, short retreats, in fact ordination retreats, in the course of which there were altogether some 8 ordinations. We now have 8 more upasakas in India, all of them of Indian origin.